This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
You have got to generate economic growth because growth generates revenue. But you also have to bring spending under control, and not discretionary spending. That isn't the driver of our debt. The driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries.
Did Senator Marco Rubio reveal the secret behind the GOP's tax package? Senator Bernie Sanders thinks so.
When my Republican friends talk about saving Social Security and Medicare, what they are talking about is cutting it.
Lawmakers are back in Tallahassee for committee week, but another scandal is rocking the Florida Senate. One of Senator Jack Latvala's sexual harassment accusers has been outed.
If the Senate wants to have any credibility at all, they're going to have to, in my view, crack down on this kind of public shaming.
The Capitalist publisher Brian Burgess has been thrusted into the scandal playing out in the press. We'll hear his side. Plus, while many coaches at Florida's flagship universities and colleges squabble over millions of dollars in salaries, some of the school's teaching faculty are living in poverty.
What is happening now is that about half of all the faculty on average around the country are now adjuncts, which is academic speak for part-time, no benefit.
We have all that and more coming up on episode 130 of The Rotunda.
It's messy, man. This is ugly. It's ugly and it's tragic, and I don't know what else to do about it.
Welcome to The Rotunda. That It is a story we've been following here on the program for some time now. Politico's Alexandria Glorioso detailed right here a few weeks ago how she's been getting tips from sources about misconduct by legislators. Six women in one of her reports anonymously accused 66-year-old Republican Senator Jack Latvala of touching and making demeaning remarks about their bodies.
And it's like, this is just not how these matters are supposed to be handled. They're supposed to be handled confidentially.
That's Brian Burgess, the publisher of The Capitalist, who's found himself part of the scandal. Not so much at the heart of it, but as part of the media and the battle of stories being leaked to various outlets, from private text messages from the accuser to the accused, showing a very cozy relationship, complete with requests for favors and many compliments. Anyway, Burgess says this was all supposed to be handled confidentially through a Senate investigation.
You know, again, I feel bad for Latvala because he was outed at the beginning, but the reason they chose that path is because the Senate didn't make these women feel confident in the first place.
In FloridaPolitics.com, there are reports detailing text messages from the accuser stating how she was dreaming of a more younger, thinner version of the senator. The Miami Herald and Tampa Bay Times conclude other text messages reveal a more complex relationship between the two than was initially reported in Politico. I've extended invitations to both parties to share their stories here on this program, but I have yet to receive a response. So we'll turn to Brian Burgess. As this case is being played out in the media, I wanted to know how he got dragged into all of it, to the point where he had to publish a more personal article on his platform.
It's a situation that I hadn't been following terribly closely, other than just to cover it as everyone else was covering it in passing and trying to keep my eye on a number of other issues in Tallahassee, but was working last week in the Capitol in my office and just got a phone call from one of Latvala's attorneys. And, you know, to my surprise, it sort of I thought he was calling to tell me to cease and desist on some of the satire that I'd been writing about and also doing in my television show, The Capitalist. So at first I was a little bit nervous that he was calling to tell me to shut it all down and kind of a legal threat. And he assured me that wasn't the case. He was just conducting an investigation. What surprised me was that he was pretty quick to say that he was doing this on behalf of Latvala and that it was related to the sexual harassment complaint in the accuser, the one known accuser. And then he proceeded to tell me that it was Brian Hughes, a former business partner, a friend of mine, who was at the center of the investigation. And it kind of threw me because I had no idea at that point. And so my head started spinning, kind of trying to figure out why I was getting this phone call.
So How do you know the one named person of the six accusers is Rachel Perrin Rogers? She's a senior Senate aide to Majority Leader Wilton Simpson. So how do you know Rachel Perrin Rogers?
Well, she's Brian's wife. I mean, I've known them. I worked with Brian for a while, and Brian got married to her in the span that I knew him. And so those two are, you know, obviously a well-known couple in Tallahassee. And, we're slightly different age groups and things, and I've got a lot more kids than they do, so we don't hang out socially a whole lot. But obviously, they're friends just from work, and knew them from having worked closely together when I was in the government. Brian was in the governor's office with me. I later worked at his PR firm for a little while, so there's a lot of overlap where I was very familiar with the two of them. And then I think that's why I got the phone call, at least one of the reasons why I got the phone call, because it's clear I knew who they were. And I don't know the other reason or the other logic as to why they chose to call me and sort of divulge or disclose this to me, that it was Hughes in the center of all of it. But I can only speculate.
What do you make of this? What do you think is going on? And how will we see this to the end? Is Latvala really, as what I read in your article, do you think that it's an intimidation tactic to really do this deep investigating to make sure Rachel Perrin Rogers doesn't speak out or some way silence her?
Well, let me say this. I couldn't figure out what the point of the phone call was at first, and I was a little bit taken aback. I joked with the lawyer for a minute, thinking, is it a lawsuit? Are you trying to stop me from sort of mocking your guy a little bit with satire? And then it morphed to, why are you calling me about Brian Hughes? And again, I joked with him again, because I said that you're being terribly thorough to call me about this, since I have nothing whatsoever to do with it. So I was a little bit confused, for lack of a better word, as to why he would call me to investigate. And then he started hinting that the other things I mentioned in the article. He said that Hughes was the instigator of all of this, which I found rather shocking. You know, not that he would be the instigator of all of it, but just the idea that they would even suggest it to me is far-fetched. It's absurd that Hughes could get six women to come forward and risk their political careers and their professional careers on something like this. And it's just absurd. And the whole allegation against Hughes is crazy. And I went through, and I want to give the guys the benefit of the doubt, whether it's his lawyer or Latvala himself, because at the end of the day, he does deserve a chance to defend himself. But I'm not sure that this was the way to go about it, where, you know, he very clearly revealed the identity of his accuser. Well, in the manner in which I laid out in the article, which was, he made it clear that the accuser was married to a political consultant. There's only a handful of those folks on Senate staff that also are married to political consultants. So already your universe is extremely limited. And then he calls me to tell me that you know, Brian Hughes is at the center of all of it, and he's a political consultant married to a Senate staffer. So you add one plus one, and you get Rachel Perrin Rogers. He doesn't have to say it out loud. So I find that to be the crux of this whole issue at this point. And it's moved beyond whether we're guilty of the allegations there. It's certainly, that's still the center of the issue, but we're now beyond that. And it seems to me like the question is, what's the Senate going to do to get this process back under control? Because clearly it is not.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with Brian Burgess of The Capitalist. We're discussing his involvement in the sexual harassment scandal surrounding Senator Jack Latvala. According to the News Service of Florida, Rachel Perrin Rogers has requested security guards when she returns to the Capitol this week.
So the Senate is back in session. It's committee week. And you mentioned that, you know, some of the support that came from Senators Elizabeth Beniquisto and Lauren Boak saying to be strong and be brave. And then you also noted the silence from the Senate President, Joe Negron, where he hasn't been doing anything, or at least publicly. What should they be doing this week?
Well, I think they have a serious problem on their hands, and that is, this investigation is supposed to be proceeding. And there's a lot of folks, including the names you just mentioned, who've encouraged these women to come forward and be witnesses. One of them did. It's Rachel Perrin Rogers. We've talked about her. Now, she's out on a limb, and Latvala has, in my view, at least from what I know, I mean, obviously we're not privy to whatever is actually transpiring with the special master in the investigation. So there may be a lot going on we don't know about. But on the surface, from the outside looking in at the Senate procedure or Senate process, it has been badly compromised, because if Rachel Perrin Rogers is the only witness that has come forward, now she's been outed. Now she's been attacked with text messages released publicly and all those things. It serves as a chilling effect, or has a chilling effect, to use a legal term. I'm not a lawyer, but it is a chilling effect on potential other witnesses to come forward. It's a good tactic, but I don't know that it's the right tactic for Latvella, because it seems unfair, bullying, and it's exactly the sort of thing he's been accused of.
Is his personality and what he's known for, is it basically like coming home to roost? Like, I'm not seeing a lot of support from colleagues in the legislature. People aren't as vocal to say they stand behind him. And is it by the way he carried himself throughout his years in office?
Well, I don't know the senator very well. I'll say that he has a reputation for being, you know, a campaigner and a fighter. And I think there's a lot of folks in that town that have that reputation. So I wouldn't fault him for that. I just think in this case, you have a situation where it requires sensitivity. This is one of the most sensitive matters that can come. And unfortunately, these six women in Politico said they didn't feel comfortable coming forward because they didn't feel like the Senate had their best interests at heart in terms of their process for handling these types of issues. And there was a number of articles when that first hit that explained that this is a cesspool of that type of behavior, and it's because people don't have the confidence to come forward and file complaints because they're not handled in a sensitive manner. So now you have a situation where the Senate says, okay, we'll do it. We're going to do it the right way. We set up a process, and it's just the process has been completely made a mockery of. And now I don't see how they can fix the situation without at least rebuking what has taken place in the press. It's just a shame. The whole thing is, in my view, compromised and badly so, and it's an embarrassment.
That was Brian Burgess of The Capitalist. There's so much more to the story. A whistleblower complaint was filed by a former Senate majority staffer, Lily Teisinger, who backs Latvala. Teisinger accuses Rogers of a pattern of harmful and retaliatory behavior. It will be a busy committee week as the Senate leadership tries to unpack all of this and tries to come to a resolution. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you the stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is sponsored and supported by listeners like you. Please send your generous contribution to rotundapodcast.com. It helps us expand our reach from your ears to everyone else's across the country interested in knowing what's happening right here in Florida. And again, check out our website for updates. And as always, thanks for your support. In other news, Congress moved forward with its massive tax plan. Here is what Senator Marco Rubio had to say to Politico before his vote.
The only way you're going to deal with the debt is you have to do two things. You can't do one, you got to do both. You have got to generate economic growth, because growth generates revenue. But you also have to bring spending under control, and not discretionary spending. That isn't the driver of our debt. The driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries.
And Senator Bernie Sanders calling Rubio to task for his apparent slip of the GOP's private plan.
Now I see Senator Rubio down here as well. He just the other day, correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Rubio, I know you just walked in and I got you into this debate. But correct me if I am wrong, if you did not say yesterday that the Senate would now proceed to a quote-unquote entitlement reform, which in fact will mean cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And I would yield to my friend from Florida to tell me whether or not I am accurately portraying what he said just the other day.
Mr. President, it would surprise my friend to know that in Florida we got a lot of people on Medicare and Social Security. One of them is my mother. If I were to cut her Medicare and Social Security, sir, I probably could never see her again or go home. So the answer to your question is no.
Let me quote you, Senator Rubio. Tell me if this quote is right. This is a quote that you just made yesterday. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. But as I understand it, you spoke to a group of Wall Street lobbyists, and this is what you said, quote.
The only way you're going to deal with the debt is you have to do two things. You can't do one, you got to do both. You have got to. Generate economic growth, because growth generates revenue. But you also have to bring
spending under control. And not discretionary spending. That isn't the driver of our debt. The driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries.
End of quote. Now let me help define what my Republican colleagues mean when they talk about structural changes to Social Security and Medicare. It will mean that at a time when senior citizens are splitting their pills in half, Republicans will go forward with massive cuts to Medicare. Now, maybe their idea will be to raise the retirement age to 70, forcing older workers in terms of Social Security to work more before they can get their benefits. Maybe it will be privatizing Medicare and giving people a voucher. When my Republican friends talk about saving Social Security and Medicare, what they are talking about is cutting it.
Also, there is so much to unpack with the tax plan, but across the board, so far, the only people excited about the proposal are those on Wall Street and foreign companies. For the tax breaks that will be handed out to corporations with no strings attached. And as we wrap, from skipping meals and having their utilities cut off, to even delaying medical treatment, a survey of nearly 800 faculty members across Florida shows poverty is common among adjunct faculty at universities and colleges. The survey by the Service Employees International Union shows more than 43% of respondents experience at least three indicators of poverty, including taking out payday loans, facing eviction, or utility cutoffs. Mike Russo, an adjunct instructor at the University of South Florida, says when schools continuously fail to pay instructors a living wage, everyone suffers.
The adjunct professors suffer, students suffer, and higher education as a whole suffers. The only one who's benefiting is the administrator who is trying to cut costs.
A full-time adjunct instructor teaching four classes per semester makes about $24,000 per year without benefits. Adjuncts at the University of South Florida are calling on the school's administration to allow them to form a union, something that's happening at other campuses in South Florida. Russo uses the desk of a former adjunct instructor named Robert Ryan, who taught full-time at the university for 20 years without employer-sponsored health insurance. After finally gaining access to health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, Ryan discovered he had cancer and later died. Russo says Ryan's story is why he's calling for an overhaul at all of Florida's public universities and colleges.
We are not going away, but we are committed to improving our own lives, the education of our students, and the university as a whole.
SEIU's report, Life on the Edge of the Blackboard, surveyed 773 Florida faculty, the majority of whom work as part-time professors or adjuncts. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program. Hit the donate button and send your financial contribution in addition to your story ideas. And be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.